Happy Friday, people. It is May 15th, and we are finishing up the sixth week of the fantasy baseball season. Only 20 more to go. I know, right? I'm Adam Azer with Al Melchior and Scott White. I hereby solemnly swear to all of you podcast listeners, and to you, Scott, and to you, Al, I swear I will not ever pick up Tim Lincecum again.
I'm calling BS on that.
You really? You think so?
I think the only question is, you know, what date are you picking him back up?
No.
I'm going June 10th.
There's no way. I can't do it. I can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a feeling of like, I should have known better, right?
Yeah.
I kind of had that feeling yesterday, too. Not that I used him, but like, why did I ever entertain the thought?
There's a litmus test. If I would feel more comfortable starting a guy in a one start week than a two start week, because I'm so afraid of two horrible starts, that's how I know I don't want him on the team. And you know who else falls in that category for me? And this will actually be more interesting. Ubaldo Jimenez.
He doesn't fall in that category for me. I started him in every league where I owned him this week, and already I'm happy with it because the first start went well.
I'm with you, Adam, on Jimenez. I'm still scared.
We'll never have consensus. Okay, today we give you some Week 7 help, hitting and pitching. We'll talk DFS later. We have, let's see, who are some of the standouts from yesterday? Doug Fister was horrible. Corey Spangenberg hit two home runs. We have Devin Mesoraco news. We have Anthony Rendon news. Getting a lot of questions about Josh Hamilton as well. Here's our email of the day for a little bit of fun on this Friday morning. It's from Eric. He says, Adam, I think you've missed two good nicknames/segment titles in recent days. Here are my humble suggestions. Instead of a 50 Cent reference for Corey Kluber, Corey Kluber should be The Kluber, sung to the tune of McGruber. I like that, actually.
Like,
I don't know if I'm singing it that well, but...
The Saturday Night Live sketch, McGruber?
Yes, and the... And I included this because this is my opportunity to tell everybody that MacGruber is one of my all-time underrated comedy movies.
Oh.
It's so good and funny, and I recommend it to everyone. Yes.
Okay. So I haven't seen it.
So I haven't either.
Maybe I'll see it this weekend as per your recommendation.
Do you like Step Brothers?
Do I like Step Brothers? It's a little... It gets a little tedious toward the end. Uh-huh. But there are definitely some great moments in it.
I compare the two. If you like Step Brothers, you will like MacGruber. And number two from Eric. Okay, look, the vocal cords are not warmed up here, so I think I'm going to fail miserably singing this one. But he says that Call on Me is pretty good, but your fringy starting pitcher segment should definitely be titled A Little from Column A, A Little from Column B.
Well, Column B got sent down, so Daniel Column B. He was briefly up with the Dodgers.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, for a while we had Column A and Column B both up in the majors.
Is that how he pronounces his name?
Oh, I don't know. That's what I'm going with.
He should.
Yeah.
Yes.
For our sake.
All right. Well, we'll see what Baseball Reference says.
Moving on. Here's our grammatically incorrect tweet of the day. It's from Lucio. What do you think of Hosmer?
Gets the message across, right?
It absolutely does. That's why I made the show. Well, guys, what you think of Hosmer?
What I think of Hosmer? I think he is a 25-year-old former super prospect who is living up to the hype at an age you would expect him to. I am totally on board with Hosmer.
I'm not. And not, you know, not because I think there's a specific reason not to be. It's just... He's not shown a lot of power in his major league career. Maybe this is the breakout. It very well could be. Scott, you point out, 25 years old, totally plausible. Also totally plausible that it's a month and a half that winds up being an outlier.
Here's our pronunciation of the day. Spangenberg. Do you know who said that?
Dick Enberg?
That's correct. Dick Enberg. After Spangenberg is the way it is pronounced. So thank you, Al, for pointing that out. But after his first home run, he said, Spangenberg! And I thought that was kind of cool.
I like Dick Enberg, but that's, you know, that's a little, I don't know, sort of egocentric.
I feel like all I heard was the highlight, so there may have been a buildup to it. You know, a reason why he did that, but it was funny. Dick Enberg's great.
By the way, Daniel Colombe is Daniel Coulomb. according to Baseball Reference.
Well, not according to us.
I'm ignoring that.
Well, yeah, he should change it.
What do you think of Corey Spangenberg? He's 6% owned. He homered twice yesterday against Washington, and he's got 4 steals in 5 attempts. He's been batting leadoff. Go for it.
We did a player video on him yesterday where I said the one thing that you cannot count on from Corey Spangenberg is power.
Well, he kind of said the same thing, actually, Al. He said, he said, I have it in me, but it's not in my swing yet, or something like that.
Okay, well, that's good to have that validated by the hitter himself. So, yeah, I'm not really surprised, but not swayed by the performance. I still think I'm surprised that his ownership rate's going up so incrementally here, only up to 6% still, because I think he is a must-own in NL-only leagues and beyond that. I don't know that he should be owned in more than, say, 25% of our leagues, but that's still a far away from where he is right now.
I'm just finding the quote for you. He said, I have it in me, but I don't have it in my swing yet, referring to his power. I don't really know what that means.
Does that mean he intends to get it in a swing at some point?
That's what it sounds like.
I would hope so. Anyway, Spangenberg. Spangenberg or Solarte?
Oh, Spangenberg. I think he walks unlike Solarte, and he can steal bases, too. So this is a former 10th overall pick. I mean, he kind of got lost in the minors, I guess, because he wasn't hitting home runs. Everybody kind of forgot about him, but there's a legit pedigree here.
The big news for you fantasy owners, Devin Mesoraco. We're going to find out soon if he will have hip surgery. So next week, Mesoraco's got 5 games in an AL park, so he can DH. He's going to try to catch a bullpen session next week, and then he'll make a decision on hip surgery. So we'll find out more about Mesoraco next week. Will Myers, wrist inflammation. He is expected to avoid the DL, but might not play this weekend. Troy Tulowitzki says he is not forcing a trade. Josh Hamilton is 64% owned, and Hamilton could be back next week. And here's an email from Kyle in San Diego. What are your expectations for Josh Hamilton when he comes back to the Rangers? In what type of league is he a speculative ad?
I'm not planning on going after him in the very leagues where he's most likely to be available, which is 12-team mixed and shallower. I think anything deeper than that, but he's not very likely to be available in 14-15-team mixed. Mm-hmm. I don't have really high expectations for him just because I think he's got a ways to come back. He wasn't very good last year. There's the health issues just on top of everything else that's been going on with him and not having played in a long time.
Yeah, and he was bad in a way that, like, it seemed like he just got old. He was chasing a lot more pitches. He wasn't driving the ball the way he did before. I mean, the footnote to all of that is, well, we don't really know what was going on with him off the field. He seemed pretty miserable with the Angels, and I don't doubt that could impact his performance. I know a lot of times it's easy to discredit that because there's no way to quantify it, but on days when I'm in a bad mood, I know I don't do my job as well as in days when I'm in a good mood. So I don't know why that wouldn't affect baseball players whose job is harder than mine.
How you feeling today?
I'm feeling all right. Feeling better than yesterday.
Oh, that's why. What was wrong yesterday, Scott? Let's talk about it.
I don't know.
Let's talk about
it. Bad mood. It happens sometimes.
Oh man. Well, I've never said this before, but I'm glad you weren't on the podcast yesterday. Also, I just kind of realized, I didn't even think about this. I just picked up Delino DeShields in a roto league, and now I completely forgot about Hamilton coming back. So that might be a dumb pickup.
Well, that was the 12-teamer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, DeShields won't help you much there. But I do think a deeper roto that he's going to get in that mix often enough. He'll give you the steals.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to talk about Shields. Go ahead.
I'm kind of rooting for him to overtake Leonis Martin. I'm done with Martin. I don't think there's enough there. And DeShields is getting on base like 40% of the time and has tons of base stealing ability. Obviously, the Rangers have to keep him around because he's Rule 5 pick. So it's not like he's at risk of getting sent down at some point. I'm as hot as he is now, I'm kind of hoping they just stick with him. But at the same time, it's not like I moved to pick him up yet.
Well, I did, and oops. I was thinking to myself, like, even if Martin comes back, they could easily take Peguero out of the lineup, but I forgot about Hamilton, who is going to possibly hit second for the Rangers. But yeah, it doesn't seem like you guys are too jazzed about him. He's 64% owned.
I will say I'm glad Scott brought up the point that he did bring up, that he it certainly does seem like Hamilton's time in Anaheim was very miserable for him. And if there's any reason to expect that he is going to get back closer to his prior form, it's just being in Texas. Yeah. And I don't think that's something that, you know, is completely irrelevant or you know, implausible.
He will turn 34 in 6 days. Not that old, but he's been around for a while. Anthony Rendon going to begin baseball activities again. Jean Segura is on the DL with a fractured pinky. Adrian Beltre, apparently he winced a few times while batting during the series against the Royals, but he says there's nothing wrong with him. Not that he'd be honest about it.
Right.
But worth looking at there. And then let's look at the Reds rotation, fellas. So both Michael Lorenzen and Raisel Iglesias are in the bullpen right now. The Reds don't need a fifth starter for a little while. So I am very plugged in the baseball community. I know a lot of writers, beat writers, who used to work for CBSSports.com and now write for the Cincinnati Inquirer. There is one such man. His name is C. Trent Rosecrans. And I emailed him this morning. I said, what do you think's going to happen with Lorenzen and Iglesias? And he said something that sucks for fantasy owners, so get ready. He said, I think they're going to kind of split it. One of them in the bullpen, the other in the rotation. Not sure there's going to be a specific guy set to take all the starts. Both will get starts along the way, it seems. Guessing that's not great fantasy news. No, Trent, it isn't. But thank you for contributing.
I don't know that it changes, like, what I consider the ownability of Iglesias, I guess. Because the only scenario where I was that motivated to add him after that performance was in head-to-head points leagues where I wanted an extra spark. And in those leagues, even if it's fewer two-start weeks than most pitchers would have, I still think, provided he's not terrible, which is remains to be seen, he would still be worth owning in that format.
I think we need to go back to Trent and ask him how long Marquis is going to stay in the rotation.
I actually included that in the email.
I
said, do you think maybe Marquis, and I even said Di Sclafani, you know, could end up back in the bullpen or something, and he didn't address that.
Wouldn't help the team.
I also asked him to ask Brian Price.
Thank you, Scott.
I did not ask him to ask Brian Price. I don't know that would end well. I can't wait to tell you who I have in my FanDuel lineup tonight at starting pitcher.
Oh, you're going sneaky, huh?
I hope you're wearing extra socks because it's going to knock your socks off. But more on that later. FanDuel hosts one-day fantasy contest. One-day commitment. All right, that's it. That's all you got to do. And for every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200. That's going to get earned as you play. Up to $200. Use the offer code CBS at FanDuel.com. I managed to not win any money in a tournament with Miguel Cabrera in the lineup yesterday. So, yeah, that's hard to do.
Yeah.
But that's what happens when Vance Worley was your starting pitcher. Guy, it was hard to pick a starting pitcher in the day slate yesterday. Just terrible pitchers around baseball yesterday, day and night.
Well, I mean, I don't want to, I mean, it's kind of a lost cause at this point, but I noticed, cause Ryan Bass, our host of, Daily Fantasy Live, was playing the day slate also. And his two lineups, he had Waka and Bauer going. And I noticed their ownership percentages were both, like, less than 10% in the contest he was playing. And those were the only good pitchers of the day. Like, why would you go with anybody but them?
Oh,
why
I totally understood
Worley
it.
Instead of them, Adam?
Because, well, first of all, I thought Waka was going to strike out two guys. And we know that strikeouts are important. And we also know the Cardinals don't strike out a lot, even though they struck out 18 times against Kluber. And Bauer's been bad. So obviously Bauer and Waka were more expensive than Worley.
It hasn't been worse than Worley.
Oh, I know. Look,
not going to give you strikeouts. I mean, what was the upside to that?
Worley was playing Philadelphia and he was cheaper and I just was taking a shot.
You know, I think a couple days ago when Raisel Iglesias was $3,000, the lowest I've seen any starting pitcher this year. And, you know, I put together a tournament lineup with him and my pitcher. and it did okay, but some of the best lineups in the tournament started Harvey that day. It's like hitters are so predictable from day to day, unpredictable from day to day, that like not only do you have to go gamble on a bad pitcher having a good game, but then you're still gambling on the hitters just like you would if they were cheap hitters. You know, the more I play, the more I decide there's just not a whole lot of upside to going cheap at starting pitcher.
Unless you think the starting pitcher is very underpriced.
I was going to say that exact same thing. I think that's the only time it makes sense.
Yeah, like Worley doesn't fit that description, but the other night AJ Burnett kind of did. You know, and he had a very good start against the Phillies. All right, anyway, more on FanDuel a little bit later. Rankings review. I want to get you guys to debate your rankings a little bit. We'll see how many we can get through here. Miguel Cabrera homered twice yesterday. Believe it or not, he's not even a top five first baseman. The position's been really good so far. Scott has Miguel Cabrera number one. I'm looking at your Roto rankings, by the way. Al has Paul Goldschmidt number one.
I think you got us backwards there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I do not.
Oh, really? I'm sorry. So Scott has Goldschmidt number one. Al has Miguel Cabrera number one.
There you go. Same inflection. I like it.
Yeah. Discuss Goldschmidt or Cabrera at first base.
Well, I remember having this discussion in the off season, and, you know, really, I mean, I think we both were going Cabrera at that point, but I could definitely see the argument for Goldschmidt, and Goldschmidt's obviously not doing anything to worsen his case this year. But I also don't see any reason to fix a ranking that doesn't feel broke to me, with Cabrera number one and Goldschmidt two.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my take too. Six of one, half a dozen of the other. But Adam, I was noticing this yesterday. The top hitters to date in head-to-head points leagues. Hang on, let me get him pulled up. All right. So
Adrian,
you got
Gonzalez.
Bryce Harper number one, Adrian Gonzalez number two, Nelson Cruz number four. All those three guys are like some of the hottest hitters early in the season, right? You'd expect that.
Right.
But then Paul Goldschmidt right in the middle there at number three, and he's just done it so quietly.
I know.
Six stolen bases, nine home runs, a .347 batting average, and maybe you expect that batting average to regress a little, but otherwise it seems completely sustainable what he's doing. It's just a really good player.
Yeah, he is terrific. All right, let's move on to Elvis Andrews. Scott has Elvis Andrews 16th at shortstop, and Al has him 5th in Roto.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm looking at my shortstop rankings. They are going to be jumbled the next time I do an update, which hopefully will be today. But once you get past 1 through 4 and go from 5 to, let me see where the cutoff point would be. I'd say probably, yeah, down to about 16th, actually. You know, just put them in
a boggle cube and shake them up.
Thank you. I was thinking, you know, popcorn machine, you know, something like that.
Oh, I said a blender. That would have been, terrible.
Yeah, no, we don't want to do that to the shortstops.
No.
But you get the idea.
Yeah.
Very
okay.
Punchy. And, not really. The few players in that bunch, that stand out who I will move up are the ones with upside. And I don't see a lot of them. I've already got Russell 7th. Simeon needs to be higher.
Yeah.
Simmons needs to be much higher for
me.
Yeah.
Those were the two I was going to stress. Yeah. And you just said you're behind him moving him up, which makes sense. But I think it's a clear top six at this point. Not necessarily in this order, but Tulo, Hanley, Reyes, who's not far from returning, Desmond, Simeon, and Simmons. Those are the six shortstops that I think set their owners apart at the position. After that, I agree with you. It's very bunchy.
Well, they have set, well, not Desmond owners. Simeon owners and Simmons owners have set their owners apart at the position. Do you expect that to continue?
I do. I do. Simeon, the strikeout rate concerns me a little bit, but the power speed combo is Desmond like, I feel like, and you know, it's not like Desmond's needing an exceptional batting average over the years to stand out. And Simmons, I just think his approach has completely changed with the new hitting coach, Kevin Seitzer, and the high contact rate he's always had is finally translating to a high batting average and plenty of extra base power, too.
I want to give you a name that I think you might have a little low in your rankings. He's outside the top. Well, Scott has him 15th, Al 18th. Johnny Peralta. I know he's not a great player, but where he hits and the lineup he hits, you know, where he hits in that lineup, just being in the lineup every day and batting in the middle of the order for St. Louis, I think it's kind of like Matt Holliday light. He's going to score enough runs and drive in enough runs at that position where I wouldn't be at all surprised if Peralta's a top 10 shortstop. Not setting the world on fire, but a guy that you can just put in your lineup every week and be like, okay, I'm okay. I'm fine at shortstop.
I think that's fair. But at the same time, as I've pointed out in other scenarios, lineups tend to change a lot these days. So I don't know. My expectations for Peralta are pretty much, I expect him to do basically what he did last year, which still may be top 10 as shortstop, but I don't think he's going to threaten that top six, I guess.
Right, right. All right, how about Matt Carpenter? Matt Carpenter is number 4 at third base for Scott and number 15 for Al. In Roto.
In Roto, yeah. And he needs an adjustment because he's just hitting so well that the gap between formats is, you know, not nearly as relevant as it was coming off of last season.
What are your, just speaking more generally, what are your expectations for Carpenter, though? Do you, because now he's up to 6 home runs on top of everything else. I was kind of approaching him as if, okay, the kind of doubles pace he's on, he's back to being the guy he was 2 years ago, who was an elite third baseman in fantasy. But now I'm wondering if he might even exceed the home run total from those seasons. I don't think he's, I mean, he was a big home run hitter in the playoffs last year. I know that's a tiny sample, but he's talked about this change he made to his approach where he got way too selective because he was batting leadoff and, you know, decided to be more aggressive. And since he did that, there's been a lot more power in general.
Yeah, that all makes sense. I would be really surprised to have him with 20 or more home runs at the end of the season. But that still exceeds, even if he's in the 15 to 20 range, which is where I would expect him to be, that's still, you know, above and beyond what I expected just a month and a half ago.
And now has Carpenter 6th at third base in Roto. Okay, here we go. Here's the big one. Carpenter, Chris Bryant.
I gotta go Carpenter. Oh, that's not even, I don't even really have to think about that.
Even in Roto, you're going Carpenter?
Yeah, now I am.
Okay.
My rankings say I am too, and I've been the big Bryant supporter on this podcast. Not that Al's exactly a detractor. I think he's the big detractor. But I kind of think he's doing it just to be the other side of the argument too.
Well, he's not a Royal.
So that's true.
Points deducted. Okay, Thursday's standouts. Doug Fister. Yikes. 7 earned runs in 2 innings. Maybe the rain delay got to him. He says it didn't. No excuses. But he's got a 4.31 ERA. Al called Fister a bust preseason. Al, he's 93% owned. What do you think about that for Doug Fister?
Yeah, I think that is way too high. Way too high. I think that should be more like 70.
I think Al was spot on with his prediction here. Taking a look at all the numbers and really more than the numbers, just the tendencies, the underlying, some underlying factors here to the reduced strikeout rate last year and even more reduced this year. It looks like Fister's completely sold out to the, okay, I have a better defense behind me, so I need to get a lot of ground balls narrative, because he's stopped throwing his breaking balls. He's basically just sinkering it all the time. And that depends a lot on luck. Al thought he had good luck last year with the ERA, and that luck may be turning on him this year. So I don't think he's beyond correcting that, because I think there was a conscious decision at work here, since it does seem to be tied to his pitch selection, but he's kind of deep into it now, so I'm not counting on him turning it around.
See, I like the way Scott went out there and complimented Al.
Yeah.
Now, if this were Thursday when Scott was in a bad mood, I don't know what he would have said there.
So we have to keep Scott and Heath off of the Thursday podcast. At least Heath. Scott, maybe that was just a random off day, but Heath Heath has it out for Thursdays.
Yeah. All right. It's good to know. Jason Kipnis. Now, I asked you guys this the other day. I don't remember who was on the show in the revolving door of podcast analysts. We kind of glossed over it because it was late in the show. But now I want to know if you think Jason Kipnis, if now is the right time to sell Jason Kipnis. He is just amazing right now. Seems to be doubling or homering every game, keeps getting on base. In 2013, he was a top three second baseman, third in points, second in roto, but he finished pretty, not so well. 266 in his last 75 games. I mean, he was so streaky that year. Right now, he's incredible. Is now the right time to sell Jason Kipnis?
I don't think so. And maybe this is just me proving to be a sucker because, coming into the season, I wrote off last year as a down year related to his oblique injury. So I had that narrative going. Then he got off to the really slow start and said, well, you know, maybe two seasons ago that was the outlier. And now, he's hitting like, that was a legit performance in 2013. So, the fact that he's doing this again, and it's not, he's doing it in such an extreme way. I just can't sell high on him. It just seems like there's now, for me, too much evidence to support the idea that it was 2014 that was the outlier. And I think if he hadn't had the oblique injury last year, I'd be more likely to sell high on him, but that just seems like such a plausible argument.
Well, with that said, you guys don't have him in your top nine at second base.
I kind of wanted to address that because, all right, who do I have ahead of Jason Kipnis at number 10? Colton Wong. All right, Devin Travis, Ian Kinsler, Dustin Pedroia, D. Gordon, Brian Dozier. I'm working my way up the list here. It's not in a league where there's no middle infield spot. Everybody just starts one second baseman. It's not a thin position. Most everybody has a second baseman they're content with. Because even after that, you have Howie Kendrick, who's plenty startable. Neil Walker. Then it starts to thin out after that. But I don't feel like anybody's desperate enough for a second baseman, at least in a 12-team league, for you to sell that high on Kipnis. And the way 6 through 10 is at the position for me. I mean, he might be the sixth best second baseman for me. You could talk me into taking him over Devin Travis right now, but you could talk me into taking Devin Travis over Kipnis also.
Okay. So one last guy I wanted to mention here, and then I'll turn it over to you. Anibal Sanchez. What a mystery this guy is. 8 innings, 5 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, and 9 strikeouts for Sanchez against the Twins, and that lowered his ERA to 4.76. 3 starts against Minnesota this year. 4 earned runs in 21 and 2/3 and 21 strikeouts to 3 walks. And in the other 5 starts, Sanchez has given up 23 earned runs in those 5 starts. So, I don't know how many more times they faces the Twins. 3 is a lot for 8 starts. What do you guys think? How do you value Anibal Sanchez?
Well, that's interesting because I hadn't noted that pattern with him. And that makes, I was sort of on the fence because he's been really good in general over his history. There's been some inconsistency. But so inconsistent this year, and I just thought, he's kind of scary, but he's really, really shown the ability to be a reliable pitcher in fantasy. But now that, given that he's really only been successful against one team, that makes me more worried about him replicating those other starts more often going forward.
Any other standouts for you guys from Thursday's action?
Well, I think we're to the point now with Aaron Harang where
crazy.
We have to give him a little credit.
That's it. That's all, though. We're not going any further than that.
Yeah, because on the one hand, it's like I think I got to a point last year where I was saying that about him also. And on this date last year, I think he still had a sub-3 ERA. But one way he's gone even above and beyond what he did then is he's just not walking anybody. And I don't really know why he's, cause even when he faded last year, he was still competent. He was still a decent streaming type in mixed leagues. So there has been enough of a sample of him being respectable after years of not being respectable that I could see him being at least that again this year, but maybe even a little better than that because of improved control. I don't really know how to explain the improved control. I don't know if it's just a guy who, you know, he kept tweaking things and, just a really studious, smart pitcher figuring out this is what he needs to do to succeed. I don't really know. I'm just kind of talking out of my butt here, but I think it's gone on long enough for Harang that, I can't just say, yeah, he's going to regress. Don't pay any attention to him. He is going to regress, but maybe not enough that he's just useless.
Would you rather have Harang or Di Sclafani?
I would rather have Harang at this point.
I would too.
Would you rather have Harang or Lincecum?
Harang. I'll take Harang there also.
I would too, and I think of the three of us, I'm actually liking Lincecum the best right now, and I would rather have Harang.
Harang or Jimenez?
Harang.
I'll draw the line there and take Jimenez. I know I'm the only one who likes him still, but he has an ERA just as low as Harang's this year, or just about.
By the way, I wanted to say one more thing about Anibal Sanchez as I just looked up a stat. The Twins have one of the worst team OPSs against righties.
Yeah.
They have the 11th best against lefties.
Yeah.
That might be a reason why he's done so well against the Twins. I want to make Friday a buy low, sell high day for people to go out and get on the weekend, see if they can acquire somebody on the cheap or sell high. I asked you guys if you had time, and I asked you really late, so I kind of blindsided you with it. For a few buy low candidates and sell high candidates, I don't know if you did your homework assignment, more of a pop quiz than anything.
You know I hate buying low and selling high, Adam. Right?
I love it. I love
you're
it.
Just doing, you're wanting to put me in a bad mood on a Friday. That's what you're trying to do here.
Well, I mean, you've got the whole weekend to recover from it if I put you in a bad mood on a Friday. I think it's, honestly, I really think it's the way to win in fantasy. You are afforded, not the only way, but a way to win in fantasy. You are afforded a few opportunities throughout the year to go out and acquire players that are going to obviously make your roster a lot better. And if you were one of those owners that got Corey Kluber or got Chris Sale, I mean, you wouldn't believe some of the emails we get. I don't even read them on the show because they're so outlandish, but it happens all the time.
And I understand that maybe I'm just not used to playing in leagues where people are going to fall for that stuff.
Right. I know, but it happens.
Cause you got Kluber in the podcast league, right before his 18 strikeout game.
Yeah.
And you traded Anthony Rendon straight up for him, which I think I would have done that too, particularly if you already felt good about your second and third baseman, but it wasn't like an obvious buy low scenario to me because Rendon, I mean, it's an elite player at two fairly weak positions when he's healthy, yeah. And doesn't seem like he's that far away.
Yeah, no, I mean, it wasn't.
In the podcast league, I'm saying it didn't seem that easy to pull off a buy low with somebody like Kluber.
No, it was a fairly even trade, but the podcast listeners are smart. They're good.
Of course they are.
A lot of other listeners out there are terrible. So a lot of other fantasy owners out there are terrible. So take advantage of it.
Yeah,
Al.
Not listeners, the people who aren't listening.
Al, give me some buy lows.
Can we go just singular on that?
Yeah.
I just had one top of mind, and this, and maybe after the last couple of days, is not even a buy low anymore. Jose Bautista. I've just been, I guess I shouldn't be surprised at the level of concern for him, but, I just think that, you know, he's fine. He's fine that the, sure, I understand he can't throw, but I don't think it's affecting him at the plate at all. And the home run power has been a little slow to come around, but the doubles power shows me that his swing is fine. And of course, now, the home run just last night. So.
See, that's interesting because I would be a little scared of buying into Jose Bautista because this shoulder thing doesn't seem to be going away. And I get what you're saying. Like every time he gets an extra base hit or certainly a home run, it's encouraging, but it seems like every other day we hear a report. Well, we're trying to avoid putting him on the DL, which just makes it seem inevitable to me. At some point, he's going on the DL. So it would be a lot harder to buy into him if he was just doing nothing. But at the same time, it's still, I'm afraid I'm going to trade for him. And then next day he's on the DL.
I got two names that, or Scott, did you have any buy lows?
I could come up with one if you're willing to stall.
Yeah, I'll give you.
I've got a couple of sell highs.
Well, I'll give you a couple of buy lows. Right. Just questions. What do you think about George Springer and Jorge Soler?
Oh, okay. I don't. I hadn't really put Springer in that category because even though the batting average is low, I feel like he's been productive enough that his owner's generally happy with him. But if not, sure. I think I've seen enough from him to think that what concerns I had about him coming into the year were mostly unfounded. Soler, I could call him a buy low too. I don't know. I don't really know what to think of Soler yet. I've been a little underwhelmed, and because he's striking out so much, I'm not as confident in him living up to my preseason expectations as some other players. But there is a ton of upside here, and I do think in the long run he's better than this. So just depends how low I'm buying, I guess.
Was that enough time for you, Scott?
Well, no, because I was talking. Somebody else has to
you
talk.
You can't multitask. Okay, Al, we'll get your sell highs.
All right. These are guys I've written on recently, so yeah, I was able to kind of come up with them top of mind. And one is Dallas Keuchel, and it pains me to put him in this category because I drafted him in a lot of leagues. I feel like I've touted him a lot. And as I've talked about before, I hate parting with guys that I've kind of gotten attached to. But there's just no way he can sustain anything close to what he's done so far. And yes, I know he is the best ground ball pitcher of this current era. But that only takes you so far. And if you actually, you look at the peripherals, aside from the ground ball rate, what he does is not that different from Alfredo Simon.
Give me a name. Give me a name.
Simon got off to the great start last year, I wasn't buying into it at all.
Sorry to interrupt, Al, but give me a name. You're going to put up Keuchel on the block. You want this guy back.
Gosh, this should be easy because I've actually tried chopping him around and I'm forgetting who I put him out there for. All right, I'm just going to look at the pitcher's list to try to, unless you can.
Michael Wacha?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah,
really?
I do that very easily.
Steven Strasburg?
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I moved
Strasburg down just ahead of Keuchel.
I have to admit, I'm not going to do that because I'm really concerned about Strasburg. I would do this. I'll tell you, Alex Wood, actually, I made an offer. I'd deal him for Julio Teheran.
Whoa,
you were just down on both of these guys.
Ow.
Like a week ago.
Even if you think those guys are going to be better than Keuchel, you're going about it the wrong way. You need to get more back. You can't just get two guys who have been pretty bad for one of the best pitchers in baseball right now.
All right. Well, that's fair. That's fair. Okay, so I'm looking to see who is. All right, Hamels. I think that's a reasonable one.
Yeah, that's doable.
I think Lester too.
Arrieta?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. All right, so we know where the range is.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking of Arrieta because again, it's, you know, he's also gotten off to a very good start, but
not
if
really.
Somebody's willing to do that.
He hasn't really. He hasn't set the world on fire. Like I feel like you could get Arrieta right now.
It's the wrong time, because he was great last start.
Yeah.
The previous two starts would have been better because he went about five innings in each, I think.
Yeah.
But may have missed your chance there, kind of like with Kluber.
All right, Scott, you've had plenty of time, sir. Al had another sell high.
What's that?
Al, did you have another sell high?
I did. Starlin Castro. He's doing again what he did last year, which is he's hitting for average. Despite the fact that there's nothing, in fact, there's even less now in his peripherals that suggests that that's sustainable compared to last year. And he's also not hitting with any power. And there's a very obvious reason for that, which is that he's hitting a lot more grounders this year. So I don't really see anything in the peripherals in terms of the pull rate, the ground ball rate, the strikeout rate, the plate discipline in general that suggests that he's really going to produce much.
Okay. Now it's Scott's turn. Sorry about that, Mr. White.
Well, we covered just about every buy-low starting pitcher in that Dallas Keuchel discussion, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a couple hitters who I noticed here. I think the most obvious one is Kyle Seager, who homered a couple days ago, but has done a bunch of nothing this year. He's on pace for like 70 strikeouts or so, which would be like half. That might be exaggerating, but it'd be well below what we're used to seeing from him. So making tons of contact. I think there's a lot of bad luck there, and his track record is consistent enough that I expect him to come around. I also think a guy we never talk about, Lucas Duda, is a pretty good buy low candidate right now just because he has only 3 home runs. Meanwhile, a lot of what he did peripherally last season is still the same this season. I think he just hasn't had a hot streak yet. And at a deep position especially, his owner might be getting frustrated with the lack of home runs and be willing to sell him for 50 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
Those are 2 biggest names that I came up with. I could call like Steve Pierce a buy low, but he's only 40% owned, so chances are a lot of the people listening can just pick him up or wait a little longer till his owner drops him or something. Like that. That's almost so low that there's not somebody low enough on your roster you could trade for him.
And do you have any sell highs?
You
don't have to.
Sell highs are even harder for me. I guess I would, I guess Russell Martin would be at the top of my list. And I was the highest one on him coming in. I do think he's legitimately a top 10 catcher, but that power surge he just came out of, I don't see him hitting 30 home runs this year. So, it's with all the injuries at the position, you could probably get something pretty good back for him.
I need to know what you guys think of Michael Wacha and Trevor Bauer, who both had a lot of strikeouts yesterday, which was very unusual for Michael Wacha. And Bauer pitched pretty well against the Cardinals. Pitched very well against the Cardinals. What do you think about them right now? Interesting starts.
Well, Wacha, I have confidence in. I'm not sure what to make of the strikeout trend. I figured he would rebound from what he had been doing, but whether or not he can do this sort of thing on a regular basis, I'm also not that confident. But it just, he does everything else so well that, you know, I'm not looking to sell him. But Bauer, I really don't know. And, I think this is a 2-start week.
Yeah.
Coming up. Yeah.
I got,
I'm probably, it depends on the format, but in a 12 team league, I'm probably not going to start Bauer. And we talked about this a little bit in the office, you know, that I take these wait and see weeks when I don't know what to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I get burned. I could very easily get burned by sitting Bauer.
This upcoming week, he's making 2 starts. You want to start him?
At the White Sox.
And home against Cincinnati.
And then at home versus Cincinnati. Now, I've got him in Tout Wars. I'm almost certainly going to start him there. That's a 15-team mixed league. But I think I'm going to wait and see how he does.
I feel like, I saw him dropped in a couple of my leagues. Fortunately, I picked him up. I was able to pick him up. Like, the kind of start he got off to this year, so he had a rough 2-start stretch after that. It was just 2 starts, and in one of those 2 bad starts, he didn't walk anybody, which is his big problem. So I just feel like people were way too quick to give up on him, given that he struck out 11 in his first start, and then now he has a 10 strikeout game. There's just so much potential here, and 2 starts following a good 4 starts shouldn't be enough to give up on it.
Okay, then. Injuries, news, and notes. John Jay's on the DL. It's a tough break. Matt Holliday returned to the lineup. He's reached base in 32 straight games. Kelly Johnson's on the DL with an oblique strain. Chase Whitley left last night's start with an injury. It looks kind of serious. Juan Lagares is expected back today. Brandon Morrow will begin throwing in the next 3 to 4 days. Luke Gregerson should be available today for Houston. Carlos Gonzalez hit a 3-run homer after we...
Notice neither of us mentioned him as a buy low.
Yeah.
That was intentional on my part. He makes me nervous.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Willam Nazario played first base against a lefty. He went 2-for-4 with a home run. Do you think that's just going to be what he's relegated to?
Yes.
Yeah. Brandon Phillips was out again with a toe injury. Skip Schumacher started at second base. And Jonathan Singleton hitting very well in AAA. And the Astros are noticing.
And late breaking, not a surprise, but the Phillies have promoted Michael Franco.
Oh, cool. All right, well, there you go. Third base prospect for you. Finally, before we do the Week 7 help and the DFS and the emails at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, a little segment called, I'm tired of talking about these guys, but I kind of feel like I have to talk about these guys. Marlon Byrd, Chris Colabello, Shin Soo-Chu. just more good stuff from these guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Take it away.
Okay. Well, Colabello is just doing his Colabello thing where crushes it at AAA, comes up for a week or two in the majors and keeps crushing it. eventually pitchers are going to catch up to him. He's like the post, if you looked up quadruple A player in the dictionary, it'd be a picture of Chris Colabello there.
No, it'd be, that third baseman for the Angels from like 4 years ago. He was like a huge prospect.
Dallas.
Yes.
Oh, Brandon Wood?
Was it him? Oh, wait, who was the Dallas guy?
Dallas McPherson.
Yeah, Dallas.
No, I think it was Brandon Wood.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Well,
could be either.
Okay.
There's a lot of quadruple A players, but right now Colabello is the one who, cause he keeps coming back. Bird and Chu. I'm fine with Bird and Chu. I think Bird just got off to a slow start and is back to doing what he's done the last 2 years. 250-ish hitting, 25 homer type. You know, solid fourth or fifth outfielder in Roto. Chu's interesting because he has a lot more upside than that. And I think he's proven this month that he's not finished. I just don't know who he is anymore because he's not walking at all.
Yep. Yeah, in the month of May, and again, he's had a hit in every game this month.
22 for 59.
Walks, 5 walks in 14 games, 20 strikeouts, and that's over 59 at bats. So the encouraging thing for Chu is that he's hitting with a lot of power, and I think he can continue to do that, but he has, for the month, a 500 BABIP. So I could see him, hitting in the lower 200s with a lot of power, and that's, you know, probably good enough for a 5 outfielder league, but definitely not good enough for a 3 outfielder league.
Who are we starting in week 7? Scott White, your hitting advice, please.
All right. Well, as far as the favorable matchups go, what do you think of a Rockies team playing 8 games at Coors Field, half of those games against the Phillies starting rotation?
My question is, start or sit Carlos Gonzalez?
Oh, I'd be starting him this week. Ooh. Especially since 7 of the 8 pitchers on the schedule. Well, I guess I'm taking some liberties there because we don't know who's starting the second game of a doubleheader for the Giants, but at least 6 of the 8 pitchers are going to be right-handers. So Cargo's in, Justin Morneau's in, obviously Charlie Blackman's in.
All right, excellent.
Maybe DJ LeMahieu's in. I don't know who else you have at second base. Kind of a stretch there, but the point is the Rockies are going to score a ton of runs, and they have an extra game to do it. So they're the clear number one matchup this week, followed by the Angels, Mariners, Giants, and Rangers. The Giants are interesting because I mentioned they were playing that doubleheader at Coors Field. They have 7 games. 4 against lefties. Who that doesn't benefit is Brandon Belt. He's been hitting pretty well lately. Who does benefit, though, is Angel Pagan and Brandon Crawford, who's has these crazy reverse platoon splits. It's a 2-year trend now. It's well over 300 against lefties and has been, for a shortstop, hitting with decent pop this year. I think 4 games at Coors Field. You know, there's a decent chance he hits a home run or two this week, so I kind of like him. Bad matchups. A lot of 5-game weeks. There are 6 teams playing 5 games. Not all of them have bad matchups, but obviously 5 games is a pretty big hurdle to overcome itself. So the Reds are one of those teams with 5 games. They're my least favorite. The Twins, they're second worst. They also have 5 games. The Royals, 5 games. The Dodgers, 6 games, so kind of moving away from that now. And then the Mets, who actually play 7 games. They're a distant 5th among the worst matchups. Now, what's interesting about the Reds and the Royals, who I said have 5 games, that all of them are supposed to be against right-handed pitchers. So that makes it even harder for somebody like Lorenzo Cain. You look at his lefty-righty splits. And the fact he's just kind of slowed down in general. I wouldn't be opposed to sitting him in a 3 outfielder league this week. Marlon Byrd, red hot, but he's done most of his damage against lefties. That
works for me.
That works for you, okay.
Let's do 2 star pitchers here. Starter sit Cole Hamels and Aaron Harang at Colorado and at Washington.
Start Hamels. I would sit Harang just simply because of the start at Coors Field.
CJ Wilson at Toronto, at Boston. Dan Heron, Arizona and Baltimore at home. Taiwan Walker at Baltimore, at Toronto. Jimmy Nelson. I'm not going to keep naming all these matchups. It's going to get tedious. But I'm looking at guys in the 70 to 80% range, maybe available in 10-team leagues.
Well, before we go there, because I get the range that you're going in, but Jose Quintana is 84% owned. He's only 49% started. He's been great lately.
That'll change.
He's got the Indians and the Twins at home. You got to get him in your lineup.
Okay.
All right, but yeah, moving on to the guys.
Actually, I don't think you can start John Lackey at the Mets and at the Royals. Two road starts for him.
Road starts, yeah. The venues aren't bad, especially Kauffman Stadium. If there's a reason to hesitate with Lackey, it's just that his opposite number in the Mets game will be Matt Harvey. So I think he'll have a hard time picking up a win there. So he's a real borderline guy. I think he's viable to start, but he's not my first choice.
I think the two-star pitchers are dreadful this week.
They're pretty bad on the whole. But if you keep going down that list, Wilson, I mean, he's been pretty good, but I don't really trust him. He's not getting many strikeouts. He's not giving up a lot of extra base hits, but the ground ball rate isn't where it typically is. I just am still not really trusting CJ Wilson. And at Toronto, that could be pretty bad. Heron, on the other hand, who got crushed by the Dodgers, he's back at Marlins Park, and I really like him there. So I would feel okay starting a two-start Heron at home against the Diamondbacks and Orioles.
Go ahead, Seth.
First few two-start options are available this week. You mentioned benching Bauer before. I don't know how that's possible. I'd probably start CJ Wilson too, to be perfectly honest. I get what you're saying about not totally trusting him, but I don't want to have just a six start week if I'm passing on some of those guys.
I could see that. And it sort of depends what your options are. If you've got the better ones, a couple of the better ones, already in your rotation, I wouldn't want to chance it with those guys. But if that's really your best shot at getting a sixth or seventh start in your rotation in a five starter league, I wouldn't advise against that.
How about Nelson and Fires at Detroit and at Atlanta?
Very sort of similar. I'm actually a little more trusting of Fires at this point than Nelson. I kind of keep flipping between the two. But Nelson's just the last four starts or so just hasn't been very good, giving up a lot of extra base hits. And as a major leaguer, he's just been very inconsistent. So especially with the Tigers as his first start this week, I would pretty much avoid Nelson. I put Fires kind of in that same Trevor Bauer category where, you need that extra start to just even be competitive. I would take a flyer on Fires, but I do so with a good deal of nerves.
I'm going to speed you guys up here, so we're running out of time. Drew Hutchison.
No, not. Just hasn't been good. And two starts at home. Very, very risky.
Is there anyone that – Drew Pomerantz is 51% owned. Carlos Frias is 48% owned. Is there anyone that you like?
Two that I like especially are Ruby De La Rosa at Miami – at home against the Cubs, and Frias I do like.
Especially as a SPARP.
Yeah. Absolutely. Other than that, now, Keith pointed out something really interesting because I was pretty much treating Chris Tillman as DTM. But it's really only been – you talked about Anibal Sanchez with the Twins – well, Tillman's been really good consistently, except for the three times that he's faced the Blue Jays. So I should probably have more confidence in Tillman than I've had so far. And he's got to start at the Marlins. I think the lineup is fine, but the park certainly helps Tillman. So, I probably wouldn't start him, but maybe still one of the better options.
Now, you kind of passed on Hutchison. Nine strikeouts yesterday, and I think 15 strikeouts in, I don't know how many innings his last two starts, but basically his last two starts have been good.
He was at the Astros, though, last night.
Yeah.
He did look really good. I watched the start because I haven't been too impressed with him this year. He had a great fastball, and he got 16 swinging strikes yesterday. It's really good.
And I don't feel like the Astros are quite the Astros anymore. I mean, you're going to get a lot of whiffs against them. But in terms of the overall result, I mean, that lineup is so much better this year that I think there's just as much, if not more, risk than reward in facing them. So especially a guy like Hutchison, who's very fly ball prone, I saw more for him to lose in that start than to gain. And that said, because he's been so inconsistent, I'm not that encouraged, even though it clearly was a very good start for him.
All right. This podcast is super long, but you know what? It's Friday and I don't care. Let's read some emails and then we'll do DFS. From Will in New York City. Hey, Frank, Dean, and Sammy. 12-team head-to-head categories league. Would you trade Tulo and Longoria? Give up Tulo and Longoria for Donaldson and Desmond.
I think I would.
Oh.
I would do that.
Instantly.
I think so.
Instantly.
Giving up Tulo is always hard. I mean.
Well, let me ask you this. If you're drafting right now, are you taking Donaldson or Tulo? For, like, who's going first in your draft?
I would have to say Donaldson at this point, yeah. Right.
I agree, and that's a switch from 2 months ago.
The only argument against that is that third base is so good this year, so you don't have to take Donaldson. Will has a separate question. Longoria or Machado rest of season?
This might require a rankings reboot for me because I'm almost positive I got Longoria ahead, but I think he's Machado's earned his way ahead of him.
Yep. I just was going to agree with that really quickly, and I'm not that sure. I actually still have Longoria ahead, but that may change soon.
It's a good question. I think it's close to a push.
This is from the Springfield Isotopes, who are in last place right now. Dear Sheldon, Screech, and Urkel. Yeah, I like it. Nerds. In a 10-team head-to-head category league, would you drop any of these guys for Josh Hamilton? Jorge Soler, Jason Hayward, Alex Gordon, or AJ Pollock?
Not a chance.
No, Pollock's the closest, but no.
From Jason in New York, grade the trade. Give up Manny Machado, get Matt Harvey.
Oh, boy.
A?
Yeah.
Nice. Nice work. Brett in Lowell, Michigan. Chris, Robert, and Mark. I don't know them. 12-team, one catcher league. Yan Gomes and Travis d'Arnaud are available. Who should he pick up? It's an OBP league.
I'd go d'Arnaud.
Yeah, me too. Chris, Robert, and Mark may be Avengers actors, but they're such three common names. Like they work for Avengers actors, but they work for a lot of other things too. Probably.
Let's go with that. Good job.
Yeah.
And Al Brodax from somewhere in the Bronx. Can you explain how Scott has Jason Hamill 57th and Al has him 87th?
I was hoping you wouldn't read this one because. It definitely reminded me that I need to move Hamill up. And look, I mean, my ranking him so low has to do with just the inconsistency that he's had over the years. But he's certainly doing enough this year that I need to have more faith in him.
And there's certainly not enough after him, I feel like.
Yeah.
Even if you are kind of nervous about him, there's just starting pitcher after the top 60 gets really ugly.
So I love talking DFS. It's just so fun. And you should watch DFS Live 6 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight on CBSSports.com. Or Daily Fantasy Live, not DFS Live. Daily Fantasy Live, 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
Well, you've had us in suspense about the sock-knocking pitching selection that you're making.
I actually think it's completely reasonable. He's just so cheap. He's the fifth cheapest starting pitcher. There are 30 of them going today. And he's
okay, I haven't looked at the prices yet.
Oh.
So I'm just going to guess.
Okay.
Chase Anderson?
Carlos Rodon.
Okay, I thought maybe him.
Now look, the A's don't strike out that much. The A's are a good lineup. The A's have, I have the stat here, they have the second worst OPS against lefties. So I think Rodon has a good chance, and this is kind of a shot in the dark. Look, Bumgarner's going tonight. Kershaw's going tonight. You got some really, really good pitchers.
Pineda's
going tonight. I think in a tournament, I'm going with Rodon. In a cash game where half the contestants win, maybe you don't go that low end. But I'm taking a shot. It's got a lot of upside.
Hey, it could work out. And that's the thing. Like, you could throw any lineup out there in daily and it could work out. with all those great pitchers, there's no way I'm going cheap at starting pitcher today.
Yeah, it's more of a tournament, like,
I gotcha. Yeah. But even in tournaments, I won it.
All right, Adam Jones. I like him tonight. He is the 20th most expensive outfielder You know, and he's kind of cold, I guess, but 7-for-23 with two home runs against Jared Weaver. Weaver is at Baltimore. I like it. I think it's got a lot of potential there. Lefties versus Chad Billingsley. That's interesting. They're 8-for-24 with three home runs so far against Billingsley, and they're facing, he's facing the Diamondbacks. So David Peralta, Ender Inciarte. The only problem is they're kind of expensive. They're $100 cheaper than Adam Jones. $3,500. I don't know if that's warranted, but that's a good matchup. Prince Fielder is 7-for-22 with two homers against Bruce Chen. If you want to go kind of cheaper at first base, he's the 12th most expensive first baseman. Lefties for the Dodgers as they face Eddie Butler. I have Andre Ethier at 3,100 and Yasmani Grandal at 3,000, 7th most expensive catcher. And if you want to take a shot, Curtis Granderson has great numbers against Kyle Loesch, who hasn't been very good at all this year. Granderson's just $2,900, and he is 8-for-17 with two home runs and only one strikeout in 20 plate appearances against Loesch. I don't know if you guys have anything to add. Like, would you rather have Granderson at $2,900 or Peralta at $3,500?
Granderson.
Yeah, off top of mind, I'm going to agree with that. But right. Obviously, I'll have a lot more tonight at 6.
Yeah. Tonight at 6. Things change and the lineups come out. My initial lineup right now, and I have $700 left over, so it's subject to change. I've got Rodon, Grandal, and then my infield, I'm pretty good. Paul Goldschmidt, who's so expensive. Manny Machado, Jose Altuve facing R.A. Dickey. Elvis Andrews, bit of a cheap play there, $2,600. Shortstop's terrible. And I got Adam Jones, Andre Ethier, and Curtis Granderson.
Altuve totally made my night last night, so.
Yeah.
Hopefully he can do it again.
And he had cooled off a little bit, so now you gotta feel like it's time. I feel like it's easy to steal on R.A. Dickey. You would think logically it would be. I don't know if that bears out, but.
I'm always nervous about starting hitters against R.A. Dickey, just cause knuckleballers so unlike anything else. It's hard to know which hitters are going to just be completely bewildered by it.
That is a fair point. All right, he'll have two or three at-bats against Dickey, and then their bullpen will come into play. So
maybe.
Let's just say that. If you guys have anything else to add, feel free. If not, have a great weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey,
did
I have a move.
Talk about Michael Franco at all? I mean, did you talk about him earlier in the week?
Yeah, we did. Okay. I think we did on Monday.
Yeah, I mean, pretty good prospect, but borderline ad for me. Probably not in standard 12 teams.
Yeah,
I have a movie for you to see. Scott in particular.
Oh, really?
By the way, Jose Altuve is only 2-for-14 against R.A. Dickey. Thanks for making me rethink it. Ex Machina.
Okay.
Go see it.
I haven't even heard of it.
I hadn't heard of it either. My friend suggested it and we went and it's really good.
Okay.
So I think you'll like it, you especially.
Well, Al doesn't watch movies, so.
But I have seen the ad for it, so.
Oh, okay.
At least I'm out in front of that curve.
Yeah, you're ahead of me there.
I think Al would like it. Thank you all for listening. Really appreciate it. Daily Fantasy Live tonight, 6 p.m. with Ryan Bass and Heath Cummings and Scott tonight.
Yes, sir.
And Scott White. I'm Adam Azer for Scott White and Al Melchior. We will talk to you on Monday.